See more innovation in packaging and processing at Pack Expo International than anywhere else in the world. It's the show that defines where the industry is headed, with the solutions that define where your business can go. Discover cutting-edge packaging technology, processing equipment, new materials, sustainable solutions, supply chain resources, and much, much more. You'll walk away with innovative solutions to challenges big and small. Register at PackExpoInternational.com. You're listening to Unpacked with PMMI, where we share the latest packaging and processing industry insights, research, and innovations to help you advance your business. Hi, and welcome to Unpacked with PMMI. I'm your host, Sean Riley. On today's episode, we delve into the intricate world of the circular economy's role in sustainable packaging with our guest, Tim Grant. As Director of Life Cycles, Grant sheds light on the importance of integrating economic considerations into environmental strategies, highlighting how the circular economy offers a more accessible framework for both industry and government. We navigate through the complexities of sustainability metrics, discussing the balance between reducing material use and promoting recyclability. Join us as we unpack the challenges and opportunities in aligning sustainability goals across the global supply chains, driven by both consumer demands and the pivotal role of multinational corporations. With all the fancy introductions out of the way, welcome to the podcast, Tim.
Hi, Sean. Glad to be here.
The pleasure is all ours. So I guess to kick things off, maybe we could start with a high-level question of what do you mean when you refer to the circular economy?
The circular economy, in its strict definitions, is about designing out waste, keeping materials at their highest value, and restoring nature. But that's more like the high-level spiel of what it does. What it really is, in some ways, you could see it, particularly from the packaging industry perspective, as a bit of a repackaging of the old waste hierarchy and a bunch of earlier things, eco-design, environmental conscious design. Mostly it's like being able to take those things and put them into a much more accessible framework for industry and government, hence its success way beyond many of its sort of predecessor methodologies and approaches that were more academic or maybe for high-end leading industry, but never really picked up more generally. And I think one thing that's really important in the circular economy is the word economy, because the economy to me is what we create as human beings. It's our interactions. And so to have that at the center of really realigning, creating an economy that we want and that we can maintain and create that is useful to us is a really good concept at that very high level.
Very interesting. Okay, then with that in mind, how does an organization define and prioritize sustainability goals within that larger framework of the circular economy?
Yeah, I think it's important to separate out the sorts of goals, and we probably refer to them as indicators, mm-hmm. that you're going to use to address particular goals, between ones which input related, what are you doing actively to achieve a better outcome? And so that might be things like training and redesigning products and setting targets themselves is an action of change. Then there's outcome indicators, things which describe, well, you've increased your overall level of recycled content, you've increased your circularity, you've made what you think are better products. And then at the third level really is, what are the impacts you're having? So having indicators and goals around, you know, actually reducing overall impact measured in things like carbon footprints, water footprints, other environmental metrics. And so I think it's important to address all three of those. The environmental impacts are often a little slow to change. You can make a lot of changes, a lot of effort, and get a very small shift, while the sort of lead metrics of changing your processes, working through your product range to make sure everything has had some view of redesign as aligning to particular principles and goals, is something you can really do early on and measure that you have those systems in place. And then hopefully with a bit of lag, your impacts will start to come down associated with the product mix.
Okay, so then
taking the circular economy, there's often this trade-off between the different sustainability metrics, whether it's water, climate change, recycled content, plastic-free, et cetera, the different sustainability metrics. How can you navigate and balance what might be perceived as conflicting objectives, such as reducing material use versus promoting recyclability or circularity?
I think the first important thing with that is to recognize that there are trade-offs and tensions, maybe is also another word we might use, as a between things, and not to wed yourself too closely to a particular narrative about something you're doing that is great and ignoring some of those tensions and trade-offs. So the first thing is to recognize that it's not easy and these things exist and need to be addressed and you need to find a way to navigate through them. The second part would be to try to resolve those metrics using ultimately the impacts of where we're really trying to make a difference. So the impacts are the sort of end point of all of this activity, at least from the point of view of the environment and from most high-level sustainability goals. We're trying to reduce impact. So it's not surprising from someone who's a director of a company called Life Cycles that I'd suggest that life cycle assessment plays an important role in trying to resolve these tensions, and maybe not for every pack or everything, but in certain key situations using something like life cycle assessment to say, okay, what in which circumstances and which places can be very dependent on the product sector and on waste management systems that are available and things, do strategies work better? And this is changing all the time. I'm always like, I have my rules of thumb of what works in certain situations, and my thumbs keep falling off because I go back to the rule of thumb and I go and check it. And so it's something that is very dynamic, particularly with the changing nature of material production, the energy systems, waste management systems that are going on in different places and locations. It's not easy to just say, oh yeah, we know how that tension things, but still rules of thumb and learnings are really important to apply from specific cases into more general cases. So I think to do some work on key products through life cycle assessment and then apply that back to those learnings to your broader product range could be really important. And I think the other aspect of that is if we are using something like life cycle assessment, it's very reductive. We break the system down into little pieces and we add everything up as it is today. Usually we're normally bound by what's happening now. And that doesn't tell us what strategies are going to be maybe not great performers today, but in 5 years' time, as the economy shifts and systems get better and technology, things move along their technology curve, may have a lot more potential in the future than maybe better performers today that really are just stuck. They're never going to get any better because they are, you know, they're already a mature product. So I think we need to be careful to allow some of those trade-offs and say not always will we pick the thing which has the lowest carbon footprint, because we actually believe that this other system, if we could get it right, and if we think back to the paperless office, how many years did it take to get the paperless office into place? It seemed to create more paper for the first 10 years of its promise, and then eventually paper just disappeared overnight. In many situations, we'd all forgotten about the paperless office when it eventually disappeared. It just happened, but it takes a long time and has those benefits can take a while as people, organizations and consumers get in the swing of what it is that's being addressed and brought forth. So not having too reductionist approach, thinking a little bit about we actually do it in life cycle assessment. We do future oriented life cycle assessment where we literally take our models and project everything 5-10 years into the future to see if it changes the sort of decision we would make. And of course that comes with a lot of additional uncertainty and things, but it really can give you a different view to your journey in the different product space. And this is really important, I suppose, at the moment with the trends against single-use plastic, movements across into paper and renewable products, bio-based materials. There's a lot to, sorry about the pun, unpack in those product systems. And I still have a little bit of unclear what that is going to look like.
Interesting. Very interesting. Very thoughtful answer. Given the way supply chains are so global in nature now, how do we ensure, or how do you ensure consistency and reliability in sustainability metrics across diverse geographical regions and diverse suppliers? It is such a, the world is all interconnected now, but has a bunch of different ideas. How do you ensure that the metrics are, that are being used, are consistent?
Yeah, this is a real difficult one. And it's surprising. Packaging has been in this sort of metrics area and life cycle assessment and things. Packaging was the starting point. It was the middle point. It's still a really dominant activity in the domain. And yet it has the least standard. Maybe it's because of that. It has the least standardization of any of the sectors, from what I can tell, in terms of agreed methodology and approaches to for products. If we're in the building sector, there's a very rigid set of standards that govern how building life cycle assessment is undertaken, and hasn't been done at the international level, but it's been done by the Europeans and essentially adopted pretty much through most other jurisdictions. In the biomass and bio-based material space, there's a lot of supply chain certification and agreed approaches there. In the packaging domain, we've had a few attempts. The Global Packaging Protocol had an indicator set, but it was just the same indicator set, just a very, maybe too long. You really want something that maybe refines down and gives maybe some different tiers of assessment, because if you go too heavy with your alignment and you say, okay, here's what we've all got to do, these 20 different things, no one will follow up. Because the one thing about the packaging process is, relative to some other products, they're relatively short-lived in the design life. There are many of them, and they're all quite small, as opposed to buildings, which there appear to be many of them, but they're really big. And so I think it's dealing with the sheer number and volume of packaging decisions that need to be made, and they're made in pretty short design time frames. So having an approach that will work within that time frame. We have a software tool, PK, which is used globally by many brand owners, and our focus in that tool is for people to be able to information into their decision making in a really quick, small micro decisions, up to maybe larger strategic decisions, but more about the small, what if I make this choice versus that choice. Now, we don't have a set of recommended indicators. So we look around the world at what's happening. There's the European Product Environmental Footprint has a set of indicators and things which are applied in the packaging, but it's pretty heavy, pretty onerous, as many things that will come out of a European Union can be. And so I think even in their context, I think it's struggling to get traction or acceptance. So I'm not sure rolling that out everywhere else. There's then something called environmental product declarations, which are quite useful. These are like standard report cards. And so something you could pass between from business to business, so that everyone's reporting on it the exact same way. They have sitting behind them, they have these rules of how we will assess this thing. So I don't know, if you're doing a refillable cup, there'll be a rule about, you know, how many refills or how you should count them, or if it's a, yeah. So you set really practical rules for increasing consistency, and you also set what indicators should be used. They hold a lot of promise, but again, they're also quite onerous at the moment. They take a year or more really to produce one from start to finish. And so they're not quite there yet, but I have a feeling that what's happening in that domain is that they're getting more and more popular, and that maybe at some form of streamlined version of those, where we take the rules from them, but maybe we have to tone down the review process and, you know, the things that need to be assessed in them to make something that is usable and practical. But yet at the moment, I don't really see, and I'd be interested to hear from, you know, anyone in the industry or in the global industry, any significant attempts to try and get this thing into some form of workable shape. I know a couple of big players will set certain requirements and guidelines for their suppliers, and we're getting a lot of suppliers contacting us and asking, we've been asked by, you know, someone or other to provide data on this ingredient or this packaging material, and here's the big long list of things that we've got to do to meet that. Hopefully that pressure will build and we'll be able to come up with something, a common approach, so that producers are not having to reinvent data in six different formats for different approaches, which I don't think is not very practical.
So it's almost like the multinational companies have to set the guide, not set the guide, yeah, set the guidelines that everybody will come on board with because the governments are a little slow to come together on it.
Yeah, look, governments are never well suited, I think, to that sort of thing. I think within the environmental product declaration space, there is a mechanism where any one industry but can step forward and produce product, whether there be these product category rules, and say, okay, we want to get some consistency, and they will then publish that, and then everyone, other producers, have the ability to come in and join what's essentially a international networking group to set those rules. And that process takes a bit over a year to set the rules, but once done, they can be useful. But yeah, as I say, they're probably still not light enough, and it's hard to, when you get a group of people in a room, to get people to agree on streamlined approaches can be difficult.
Yeah, understood. Okay, how about the stakeholders, whether they're internal or external? How do you involve them in the process of selecting and evaluating sustainability metrics? And with that, what role is customer preferences and demands playing in that decision-making process?
Yeah, I think it's tricky because I think the customer is always right, and companies are often wanting to be customer-led in their thinking about the development of their product. It's really the dumbest thing to do when it comes to sustainability, because people react to what they see and what's in front of them, and what ends up in front of them is waste packaging. So the focus on solving single-use packaging and packaging waste in general is way more significant to the customer than is how packages are produced upstream in the supply chain, because they don't see how a petrochemical refinery or a paper mill or anything like that works. What they see is waste on their table. And of course, that becomes their focus. That's not the most sensible place to start your focus if you're looking at the life cycle of products, when the majority of the impacts are actually happening upstream within that production. I think what's important is that when companies are working with both their internal stakeholders, their employees are often a real driver for improvement within a company, and their customers and their suppliers, is that they bring, if they're going to do something that is a little bit innovative and maybe not just placating whatever this month's key issue is, they're going to have to communicate that really well. They're going to have to communicate that they accept that the topic is complex, that they are undertaking rigorous analysis behind the scenes of the options that they have, and then communicating why they're moving down particular directions, why they have moved into a rapidly renewable bio-based material, or why they're not moving into that, and why they're still using plastic liners within something, and the impacts of that on product quality and things. So I think they need to bring, honest, transparent sort of way, bring along their customers, rather than just saying we have to all go into paper bags and Hessian underpants because that's what our customers are asking for. So I really think we need to apply the science and try and bring people along with us, rather than just look for the short-term solution, which will be short-term, and the customers will have a different demand next year that they want attached to the product.
That's fantastic. And this was fantastic. I can't thank you enough, Tim, for taking time out of your day to come on here with us and walk us through the circular economy and the different aspects of this. So thanks again for coming on.
No problem. Thanks, Sean. Have a great day.
Please rate, review, and subscribe. To do that, go to the iTunes podcast or Spotify app on your phone and search for Unpacked with PMMI.